We're very pleased this evening to be joined by Bob Dobusch from findatube.com. Is that the correct web address, Bob?
Yes, it is.
And Bob is the radio collector's resource. He's the guy, if you need a radio tube, he's got an awful lot of them, and he runs a site which you can find his price list. You can find out a little bit about Bob, and it's an extensive list. You certainly sound like you have an awful lot of stock, I'll tell you that. And thanks for being on. We appreciate you coming on tonight, Bob.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, maybe you could just, to get started here, we talk a little bit about how you got started in electronics. I know you were telling me that you always had an interest as a kid, and you were building Heathkit. And how old were you when you got into electronics, Bob?
I would say probably about 10 or 11 years old. It started with the usual finding items and trying to fix them. And finally, since we were close to a Heathkit store there in Parma, Ohio, I ended up, you know, buying those kinds of kits and building them, and got me into electronic courses at high school and then into college. And into the industrial electronics field for a good bit of time. And when I got laid off, that's when I decided to start my own business repairing modern electronic equipment, which then slowly gravitated toward retro audio and radio equipment.
Oh, that's great. You know, you're the second guest I've had on this program who's credited Heathkit. I had another fellow on who lived across the street from a Heathkit store, and he bought a color TV kit. He begged his father to let him buy the kit. He
wow.
spent about a week, he said, day and night putting the thing together. He goes, I plugged it in, and it didn't work. But it fueled his interest, and it got him started. And apparently there was some type of a flaw in that kit, which the guys at the store recognized, and they bailed him out. But anyway, so, you know, it's funny, though, because a lot of people, when I'll talk to them about my hobby, which, you know, is collecting radios, they always wonder, you know, they say, well, how do you find vacuum tubes, you know? And you know, I can't find them. Where are they? How many are there? Are they rare? Are they hard to find? And I guess you could probably shed some light on that. I mean, how many do you have?
Well, I'd say probably right now, probably between 400,000 and 500,000.
Yikes.
Yeah, yeah.
and there were an awful lot manufactured, too, which I think is something that a lot of folks don't have an appreciation for who aren't into the hobby, is that, you know, these companies were just churning these things out left and right for years and years, and there's an awful lot of them still floating around. And, you know, they still work just as good, don't they?
Right, as long as the vacuum's still there. If they're in the box and new, they generally work. Industry used them, too, in commercial equipment, so they were ravenous users of vacuum tubes as well. So you're right, there were billions manufactured, and most of the ones you find these days are maybe stock out of an old TV or radio shop. And they're still there out there to be found. It's difficult sometimes to find, but
where do you find most? Where do you find most of yours, Bob? That you wind up reselling?
I would say a good bit are from antique auctions, radio auctions. There's one we have here in the Medina, Ohio area about every month that is a good source for tubes. But you've got to scour auction ads and find out if you see a shop closing or maybe electrical sales place that's gone out of business and
sure.
try to buy their stock. Unfortunately, though, you get a good bit of tubes that aren't really usable anymore, like for 50s, 60s televisions that are still way too plentiful. It's a little more difficult to get the radio and audio tubes.
Now, the auction end of things, you should have a pretty good finger on the pulse of. Bob also works with, I believe it's Estes Auctions, as
yes. mm-hmm.
You help them with estate auctions. And what exactly do you do with them? You help them auction off tubes that they acquire through these big estates or guys who are hoarders / collectors?
Well, that's usually what it is. Usually every radio collector's got a stash of tubes, and we sometimes get consignments from someone who might have been in the industry and wants to put some tubes in the auction. And I generally get them tested. We have usually, I'd say, 5,000 to 10,000 tubes total every auction.
Wow, that's a great figure.
And we try to glean the good ones and test the ones that deserve testing and sell them that way. But we can't certainly test everything.
Oh, I know.
But that's a good source for tubes, as well as some other various auctions here and there across the Midwest and across the country.
Now, as far as the tubes themselves go, I mean, in a lot of collectors' eyes, you know, the tubes sort of symbolizes the whole U.S. radio manufacturing industry. You know, they very fine quality by some manufacturers. It was all made here in the USA. And are there some companies that put out a better tube than others? I know a lot of the radio manufacturers would lead you to believe they were making their own, and they were just having their name, much like private label groceries, I guess, today. They were just having their name put on a tube by one of these big manufacturers. Mm-hmm. But maybe you could give us a line on who were the real, you know, legitimate manufacturers who put out a great tube. RCA up there?
RCA, and yes. I think RCA would be one of the best ones. General Electric did okay with tubes for a long period of time. They were one of the last to bow out here in this country. Western Electric did their own line of tubes, which are very high quality, desirable for audio and commercial equipment, but they weren't really making tubes for televisions and later radios. And Sylvania was a good company for that. Some of the more minor companies are desirable for tube collectors, but maybe not much for someone who's going to use them in a radio or audio amplifier, like Triad or, DeForest had their own line of tubes, which weren't very high quality. Several other companies such as that.
Yeah, up here in the Massachusetts area, I think Sylvania, in addition to having a plant maybe down in, I believe, Pennsylvania, they had one out in Western Mass. Mm-hmm. And we had a small company that sometimes you see their stuff, and I have a few in some sets that I own. They were up in Danvers, Mass. CBS Hitron was up there, and I guess their claim to fame was I think they left a lot of pollution and they cut down a very famous town tree near one of their plants.
Oh.
But that's their claim. And, you know, I've seen on different sites on the web, you know, you'll find folks who chronicle histories of companies and whatnot. And a lot of these companies, you know, they just weren't manufacturing a product. They were actually doing the R&D and all that as well. And, you know, Tungsol, I guess, is a company that maybe didn't produce a lot of vacuum tubes, but some people think awfully high of, and I guess some of their audio output tubes in particular. That was it, the 6550.
Yes, that's one they're noted for.
And mm-hmm. And they were almost run more like a laboratory, I guess, than an actual company, which is maybe why they didn't produce quite so many as some of the others. But and it's interesting stuff, and it's sort of a history of American manufacturing as well as just, you know, related to radio. And, you know, are some tubes really getting hard to find now? I mean, what are some of the rarer ones that, you know, I guess there are some people who just collect tubes. They could care less about radios. They're just trying to fill their tube collections. What's getting tough to get?
Well, these days, the audio output tubes for radio and audio equipment, such as the Type 50 tube, as far as audio goes, the Type KT88, KT66, generally made in England, are very difficult to find these days. Certain versions of certain tubes are very desirable to both audio people and tube collectors, such as tubes with a mesh plate rather than a, you know, just a stamped metal plate,
uh-huh.
Which are, you know, some say sound, you know, a good bit better. And I'd say 5AR4s, quite a few of the 50s and 60s audio tubes are probably the hottest thing out there right now, and there's just X amount of them out there.
No, and I've mentioned this before on the show, too. It's interesting. We have an electronics store not far from where we are here in Boston, and there's sort of a throwback. You know, they sell all kinds of new TV and DJ equipment, but they have this huge parts department, and they, you know, got out of the vacuum tube business altogether, and they've actually brought back a small display in the store for folks who want them for guitar amps and musical applications. Apparently that's kind of staging a comeback, that people really are intrigued by the nice sound of the amp equipment, and it's sort of a little niche now that's growing almost, the guy was telling me, which is why they brought them back.
Well, yes, in Russia and in China, there's still the audio output tubes are being made, various brands, Svetlana and others, that are getting better and better every year. The initial first run of those wasn't as reliable. They're getting better and better, and the guitar amplifier market is the main user of those tubes.
Now, what's the tube? I've had some people tell me they've had a hard time finding it. It's found in the Zenith Transoceanics, and the number of it escapes me, but there's one tube in particular out of the selection in the Transoceanics that's particularly, you know, sometimes you'll find it, you can find them, but they're a little expensive. Is it the one?
Well, there's a 1L6.
Yeah.
1L6, which is a very difficult tube. Also, in some Transoceanics, there's a 50A1 ballast tube, and that is really more difficult than the 1L6 these days.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Transoceanics sort of have a following of their own in the collecting community. You know, you find people who've got nothing else. They just collect Transoceanics. They absolutely love the things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I recently picked one up, and the first thing we did is I had a friend of mine. He's got a tester. He tested them all out, and he goes, "Yep, and that's a functioning one." He said, "If you want nothing else out of this set," he said, "you could probably," I got the set for $40. He said, "you could probably sell the tube for what you paid for the set." But I haven't quite figured out exactly what I'm going to do with it. It's a nice shape, but the speaker's pretty beat up and would probably need to be reconed, and we'll have to. The jury's still out on that. So, how is your business? I mean, do you have plenty of folks who come back and are still restoring and need to buy, or do you notice things are dropping off as the hobby kind of grays? I know a lot of old timers are some of the big, you know, radio enthusiasts, and they're falling off the wagon, so to speak, as time goes by.
Well, I think I've got with the website there, I list a lot of very minor and basic and reasonably priced tubes that are used both in radio and television, and I don't really have a minimum order, so I get a lot of orders for people maybe wanting to fix their 50s television or a later radio where the tubes are really expensive, inexpensive, and my orders have been steady here for the last 2 years.
Well, that's great.
Some orders are for $12 or $15, and I fill them because I want to keep the equipment running if I can. And there's also a early television museum there in Hilliard, Ohio, that I'm affiliated with, and that's a source for tubes as well. Sometimes we get tubes into the museum, and there's plenty of tubes we always need that we're using there to restore the televisions.
You know, it's funny, I had on a fellow from the New Jersey Antique Radio Club not long ago, and, you know, it went very well. We had a nice chat, and Rich Lee was telling me that they have a little subsection of their club, and it's like the Tube Committee, and apparently what they do is, you know, from old-timers who want to, you know, take off, you know, move their stock or clean up their house, or, you know, they know they're not going to be here forever, or they things they find, they go on these radio rescues, you know, if they find tubes or they have pulls that they take out of set, they have a little group within their radio club, and they categorize them all and test them all, and they try to make them available to the members of the club as, you know, sort of a membership benefit, which I thought was kind of a neat thing. Do you ever find people who are really looking for, like, large lots, like people who would wind up reselling them or, you know, for clubs or for club use?
Yes, I do, from time to time. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, just out of curiosity, what's the largest tube order you ever got, or does he remember?
A tube order that was asked of me?
Yeah, what was the biggest one you ever filled?
Oh, it was probably not a tremendous, probably $2,500 total.
Yeah, that's a sizable amount of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and it was a lot of common items as well. It was a gentleman that was affiliated with some other people, and they got a list together and sent it off to me, and worked out well. I think I had about 98% of it.
Well, that might not be a bad way to do it, too. You know, if you are a member of a group or you have a bunch of pals you collect with, you know, place a bulk order, and, you know, you could share it, so to speak, because it's funny. I have a couple of boxes of some of the more commonly used ones and, you know, the All-American 5s and 6s and some of my other sets, some of the Loctals, and, you know, it's not an awful lot. And then I look at it and I say, should I really buy more, or, you know, should I just, you know, because then you wonder sometimes. Well, the tube supply might last longer than the broadcast radio, AM radio, lasts in the United States, the way things are going. Do you have a feel for, you know, what people's sense are? You go to a lot of auctions, you meet a lot of people. What's the sense of the hobby as a whole? Do you think it's pretty healthy or growing, or do you think it's kind of holding its own? Or some clubs, I know I talk to some of the folks, and they say their membership is shrinking and they don't find as many people still interested in radio.
Well, I think the Internet has sometimes lessened the need for someone to travel to all the meets every year. eBay and other online sources for radios. Yeah. Maybe since gasoline is more expensive, that is part of the problem. I think the hobby has dwindled some, but the meets are where you notice it the most. But there's still a good presence of collectors that are perfectly happy to deal with, shipping a radio or buying a radio needs to be shipped. And sometimes that's more attractive these days with the cost of travel.
Yeah, and, it also is, like you look at a website like the Radio Attic where you can look at lots of different sellers' stuff from all over the country. And, mm-hmm. You can do that in the comfort of your living room as opposed to having to hit the road. The meets are fun. It's great to connect with other collectors and share war stories. Where'd you get, where'd you find that? Where'd you get this? How did you fix that one? Did you run into this? And a lot of that still gets, on the Philco forum, there's a service, people can swap that type of information and on antique radio forums. And I find it interesting that a lot of people turn to the internet to support, the old electronics hobby. Or sometimes you'll see these guys who restore radios and they have a lot of very high-tech equipment and it's dedicated to keeping what a lot of people would say is fairly low-tech, old, AM and shortwave broadcast receivers still going. It's sort of one of the ironies in the hobby. But, I guess the biggest challenge that we all have as collectors, and I talked to some of the guys who are out, running the meets and they're trying to do outreach. What do you notice about the age of the folks who are attending some of the auctions and meets? Is it still the older crowd who are less likely to get on the internet, do you think?
I believe so, yes. It's just the way it is, I believe. And as far as the ham radio crowd and the ham fest, they're dwindling just a bit too, but it's still a vibrant hobby. At the Estes auctions, we have no trouble selling good ham equipment, and that's kind of a worldwide hobby as well.
Yeah, it's a good hobby, and it's an interesting hobby, too, in that it fosters, a very personal level of communications. A lot of guys who are hams have really nice relationships with folks, whether it's on repairs or finding equipment or just, they chat about everything from sports, politics, the weather, their families, and it's a nice hobby, and it's kind of sad to see that. I had a friend whose dad was a very active ham, and, a lot of his, when he passed away, a lot of his pals came out and they went over his stuff and, they offered a fair price to the widow and the whole thing. It's just really, it's interesting. I find a lot of gentlemen in this hobby, And I'd just like to take a minute here, remind everybody you're listening to Tube Talk on WRCA out of Boston. This is the show for the collector, for the person who still likes music, for the person who still likes to listen to the radio. This is the apex of the independently produced radio experience, or at least I like to believe that myself, if nobody else does. Anyway, maybe you could share. I always like to ask stories of folks who collect radios, or in your case, where you collect the tubes for resale. Did you ever find some in a place that you would never have expected, or did you find some in a very unique situation that yielded you a good find for tubes for your business?
Well, I would probably say the most unusual spot would be a college close to me that I had no idea had any radio or tube equipment, and was presented with a request that I buy their equipment, and that was the most surprising to me, especially since I'd been around that college for 20 years.
That's kind
and
of
never had any idea they had any vintage equipment available or that they owned. As far as I'd say the great majority of what I bought came from just private citizens that have maybe been involved with the business. But the college is the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah, that is kind of an interesting find. And, sometimes you find some of the neatest stuff at places that are off the beaten path because, of course, all the collectors go to the old radio shops and they go to the swap meets and they go around hunting at the antique stores. And then sometimes you'll find it in a place where you didn't really think it would be. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a trip. Bob, maybe you could just give us a little idea how your website works. If anybody who's listening would like to place an order or check out your list of tubes, it's findatube.com. Is that where they should Google up or enter in as a URL?
Yes, that's the case. Now, I don't do credit cards at the moment, but generally if you find the price for a tube you want, you can pretty much just drop me an email. I'll immediately get you a shipping cost, and you could either PayPal or send the money order, a personal check. That's what I do. I don't do credit cards at this time. On the earlytelevision.org website, there is a tube list as well that's tubes made available from me that are discounted, and that would be that email address would get you back to my website email address, and I believe that one is earlytelevision.org is that website name.
Okay, well, very good. Well, you're a valuable source in the community, and I thank Ron Ramirez. He suggested I get a hold of you. He thought you'd have some interesting perspective on the radio collecting hobby from the tube angle. And how do you ship? You just ship them out, box them up, and out they go, UPS or U.S. mail. Tubes are pretty durable, and I would think if packed pretty well, that you could probably ship them anywhere in the world.
Right. Generally, I like to ship U.S. Postal Service priority mail. I have the best luck with that, have almost no fallout from that. And that's what I always suggest rather than parcel post, which takes a bit longer and is just a little cheaper. But priority mail is the best way to go, I believe. And that's the way I usually would recommend.
Well, Bob, thanks for being on the program. I appreciate your time. And keep the tubes glowing and keep supplying them to us collectors. It's the lifeblood. We've got to have it, along with our capacitors and resistors. It's great to know we've got a good resource for tube. Thanks for being on, Bob.
Thank you.